Started here, and I see it seems to be working because I can see our sound waves there.
So you have to be picked up on there too.
Yep. So I think should get both of us. So this is an interview with Glenn Spey, who served with the 7th Fleet Command with the U.S. Navy during the Korean War. This interview is being conducted at the Mount Horeb Public Library on Thursday, February 6th at 2 p.m., and the interviewer is Jessica Williams. So, to start us off, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and your life experience before entering the military service? Where were you born? When were you born? Your family?
Well, I'm a Wisconsin native.
Okay.
Born in the Appleton area, and my mother and father farmed, dairy farmers. I went to high school in Racine, St. Catharines, and during that senior year, I joined the Navy Reserves. There was a reserve unit in Racine.
Uh-huh.
So I had a little bit of a head start.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad worked for J.I. Case Company. He was a farmer, but he got injured and had to move off the farm, and so he was working making tractors, and that's why we lived where we did, a little town called Sturtevant.
Mm-hmm.
And probably irrelevant to this, but it was kind of interesting because we were there when Pearl Harbor took place in 1941, and we lived on a street that a few years later had a German prison camp on it.
Oh my.
And a lot of people didn't know that. There were quite a few of those in Wisconsin.
Huh.
And they brought the Germans in 1944. They were very all males, young fellows that were taken off of submarines off the east coast of the United States, captured and brought over here.
Uh-huh.
And they stayed until December of 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to know those fellows. We were little guys at that time. I was born in 1936, so we'd ride our bicycles up there and make faces at them through the fence.
Mm-hmm.
But they were wonderful young boys. My dad was from Holland, and like a lot of people during those days, came here in 1911 with his family, and he spoke German,
mm-hmm.
and Dutch,
mm-hmm.
and Belgian,
mm-hmm.
and a few other things a little. And but he was a local community representative,
mm-hmm.
for those boys because he could speak German.
Okay.
And so I say this, I wound up, as kids, we went into the German prison camp with him because he organized the soccer team,
mm-hmm.
from the local community, and those boys, German boys, played soccer all the time because,
mm-hmm.
they didn't need much, you know, you don't need, they just played there. And they lived in tents that one winter.
Oh my gosh.
They were pretty nice. They had a wooden floor. They were above ground. They, mm-hmm. were insulated under, and they had a double wall in them, and they all had wood stoves.
Okay.
And, but so that was a little introduction to military life.
Yeah.
But it was interesting when it was time for them to go home. I still can see the picture in my mind. It was in December, and we did have snow on the ground. They all laid on their backs,
mm-hmm.
by the truck. They did not want to go home.
Wow.
So some of them did come back later on. They had to go home to Germany, but, mm-hmm. they didn't want to go to Germany. It was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So that was and I was a pretty small kid then. I was, let's see, that was in 45, 36. So I was eight or 9 years old.
Hmm.
But,
I didn't know about that.
So in high school, then I took, I was in the reserves, and just for the heck of it, one of my older mentors, that I would call him, suggested that I take a course. The Navy offered, all armed forces offers a lot of study courses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to progress, the best way to do it is by taking courses.
Mm-hmm.
So I took being a farm kid, I always had a wrench in my hand, maybe at that age, oil can, and we learned a lot of things about repairing things. But anyway, as I grew up, that's what my two brothers, older brothers, did. They fixed cars, and they farmed, and they were pretty good mechanics. So I took a course that encompassed mechanics, hydraulics. Refrigeration. Mm-hmm. It was all in one, and of course it was a sketchy course, but still, I did take that, and then I went on. It was kind of funny, when I wanted to go on active duty, was the end of 1954. That's when I graduated from high school.
Okay.
I wanted to get in the service full-time so I could get a GI Bill, because at that time Congress was this was the Korean War was over.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to do away with the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly they were talking about it in Congress the beginning of 1955,
mm-hmm.
which was coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down and asked to go on active duty, and he said, "We'll tell you when to go on active duty. You don't have that choice."
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my mentor again, and I said, "What do I do here?"
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Oh, it's very simple. You go volunteer for the draft," which my two other brothers had done,
mm-hmm.
and both of them were... One was in the Second World War, and one was in Korean War,
mm-hmm.
in the actual battle area.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest brother was in World War II, was at the end of the war, really never saw battle. But he was stationed in Japan right after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "I don't think I want to volunteer for the draft." Well, he said, "You're already sworn into the Navy. They can't take you into the Army or anywhere else."
Hmm.
Well, and I didn't realize that, being a young fellow, that if I volunteered for the draft, that meant I would be in the Navy for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
No one went in the Navy for 2 years. You either went into the Navy until you were 21, which meant like 3 years, because most kids get out of high school, they're 17 or 18 years
mm-hmm.
old.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go in on a 4-year stint.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in for 2 years, and my commanding officer was not very happy with me, because and the mentor told me that he wasn't going to be happy with you, but he can't do anything to you.
Mm-hmm.
So
up till then, you were probably going to have to stay in for 3 or 4 years, but because you volunteered, you got it shorter?
I went in for 2 years. That's what you do when you volunteer for the draft.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know that at all at that time, but then that's what I found out, and I said... So I commiserated a few weeks,
mm-hmm.
but then finally went in, went through boot camp. And at the end of boot camp, you go to what they call interview, you take tests and so forth. And mm-hmm. then from that, they determine what schools you qualify for.
Mm-hmm.
And I did qualify for ET, Electronics Technician School,
mm-hmm.
but that's a 1-year school. Which is a very good school,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of schools that are 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 2 months, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
For example, artillery training.
Mm-hmm.
They get you through there in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
But electronics would have been a full year, and he said, "All you have to do is sign the sheet for another year extension in the Navy." And I said, "No, I will not do that."
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Well, you're going to be shipped straight overseas on be aboard a ship." That's fine. Well, that's how I wound up being sent to the 7th Fleet Command, and then they could do with what they wanted with me. Now, obviously, when you go into a command unit, those are all trained people. Most of them are communications technicians, because
mm-hmm.
they run the whole fleet, and they're in contact with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really fit,
mm-hmm.
but they did have carpool, and they had a boat pool of
mm-hmm.
people. You either drove car or truck. When the ship came into port and somebody wanted to go over the hill,
mm-hmm.
which our admiral did a lot in Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
he went up to the attache, which was in Taipei,
mm-hmm.
and after I got going in there. So but when I got there, then the next thing that happened to me, I got in the Navy. I got sent overseas to Yokosuka, Japan.
Okay.
To pick up my ship, which was the USS Rochester heavy cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the 7th Fleet Command was located at this point. Now, the command group moved a lot during wartime,
mm-hmm.
because the enemy was always going to zero in on the command. The commander of that command
mm-hmm.
was a three-star admiral, and he was a big fixture during the war. They were going to knock him out if they could.
Mm-hmm.
And so that command group would move from one ship to another.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always, we were like incognito most
mm-hmm.
of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done on purpose because of the command.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that either until I got involved in it. And so I went to catch the ship in Yokosuka, Japan. And on the way over, we got detained for a day and a half, as I recall, in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Hickam Field, which is right at Pearl Harbor. We flew in there. So that delayed us another day. And then we landed at, I think, Wake Island
mm-hmm.
for fueling on the way across. And something, again, we had trouble with the plane, but it was nothing. We just had to wait. So when we got to Yokosuka, the ship had left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when the fiasco began. There were three of us that were traveling together to go to that same area. So from there, they flew us down to Guam to catch the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that it's a blank to me why we didn't, the ship never came in there.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently they did that as well.
Mm-hmm.
They changed their route.
Okay.
And you could see where that would be part of the plan. And
right.
during peacetime, they would practice it so that they knew how to do it during
right.
wartime.
Right.
And then after I became a part of that unit, whenever we moved, it was at night.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'd move from one ship to the other at sea. That was fun.
Oh, boy.
You've seen those big ropes going between two ships out at sea, and so you'd go across there on a platform that was like the size of a elevator, and it was well structured. It was on a cable trolley like thing, and you went across between there.
How many people did that on a regular basis?
Well, there was like 90 of us people that were in that unit.
Did 90 people come off the other ship and go on the other one, or they just
Generally had room. You know, there was a room for, or they knew in advance enough, but most of the time they never knew in advance that we were coming.
Huh.
So
you traveled with, like, the top general then?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was command of everything. Well, anyway, back up a little bit, when I got to,
what was his name?
I have a picture of him here. His name was Alfred Pry, and he was on the front page of Time magazine.
Uh-huh.
This was my commander at that time.
Wow. Admiral Pride of the 7th Fleet.
So I used to travel. Well, I'll get to that story.
Okay.
And then, so we're still traveling, trying to catch our ship. Well, we got to Guam, and it was just lovely there. We were, us three guys were having a good time.
Yeah.
So we stayed there. Well, then they sent us down to the Philippines to catch the ship there. And we went to Manila Bay, and we were sent to a water barge, which was used as a personnel lodging
mm-hmm.
temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the Manila Bay, but we were across the bay from where the ships would pull in. And I remember, by that time I caught on. I thought, somebody's not crossing their, dotting their I's and crossing their T's. Why are we missing movement here? What's going on? So
mm-hmm.
every morning I'd get up and I'd get a pair of binoculars, which I could check out, and I'd go up and I'd look across to see if I could see any heavy cruisers. Well, the second day we were there, I went and told my buddies, you got to come here and look. The USS Rochester's pulling into the bay,
mm-hmm.
so they're going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So we went down to the office then of where we were staying. And we said, well, our ship just pulled in. You got to get us transportation. And we had to go all the way around the bay. Well, they dinked around. Whatever happened, I have no idea.
Hmm.
The next day, the ship only pulled in overnight. The next morning, it was gone.
Ugh.
And I found out later on that they did this. Whenever the 7th Fleet Command came aboard,
mm-hmm.
the regular ship's complement of people didn't like it because then that person became, he was in command above their own captain.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they would do, if they were scheduled, if that ship was scheduled to stay there for 6 days and all those sailors would get a little time off, the admiral, the commander of the 7th Fleet, his job was to break every schedule there was, because if the enemy found out what your schedule was, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we practiced that stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning, I get up and we're still there. Nobody took us anywhere. I'm watching this ship leave the bay. Now, we've been from Japan to Guam,
mm-hmm.
to the Philippines, and there it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So we missed it again. Well, then they flew us up to Taiwan. Never been there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Three of us. And I won't go into all the detail. We had a lot of fun when we first got there because nobody spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
There was no ship there.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we got up there, now they screwed around 2-3 days in Manila before we got on a military transport, because that's what we flew on, MATS, military air transport.
Mm-hmm.
And we flew into Taiwan and they weren't there. And we wound up flying, so we stayed there, I don't know, 5 or 6 days, through the attache at Taipei,
mm-hmm.
which is the capital of Taiwan.
Okay.
And we left and went back to Yokosuka, Japan, where we started, and that's when we finally caught the ship.
So even though they would sometimes have the people go to different ships, the USS Rochester was the main ship that they would eventually
come back to. Well, at
that point, Or how did that
work? You're being confused. Our whole command would move to another ship.
But at that point, they were all on
the
Rochester.
It was the Rochester all that time.
Okay.
Now, I was on three different cruisers, and that meant most ships go over for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And in this day and age, you hear people go into Kuwait or to Iraq for a tour.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally 6 months, and then they come back home.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk about being there for 5 tours or whatever, and mm-hmm. that's usually 5-6 month
mm-hmm.
units.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may have changed that somewhat now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm far removed from that stuff now. So, mm-hmm. well, we caught the Rochester. Now, mm-hmm. I knew that I was floating around inside the 7th Fleet Command. I really didn't have a position.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to go to the bulletin board where everything was posted, anything that was going to happen, any job opening or whatever, because unlike civilians, they post jobs that are open, and if you wish to apply for it and you're in that command and it fits for you,
mm-hmm.
you can apply for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way for me to do it because no one knew me at that point. Well, I'd been there 2-3 days, and I, you know, naturally we checked in and so forth, and so we were just hanging out in limbo for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But the third day I was there, there came a notice that the admiral's driver was taken sick. He had acute appendicitis, and they were looking for a driver and someone to, he had a ship to shore boat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always on duty.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a couple of people that could do that duty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, you had to take this NAVPERS test
mm-hmm.
to see if you were qualified at all. If you knew anything about nuts and bolts,
mm-hmm.
that's what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the NAVPERS is Navy personnel,
okay.
and it was a number for a coursework or whatever
mm-hmm.
that matched this test, and that was the course that I'd have that I took in high school.
There you go.
Well, I went in and took it, and the next thing I know, I'm driving this admiral's car down the streets of Japan, which is you're driving on the wrong side.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of fun. You use the horn a lot.
Uh-huh. drove him around.
I did at that point, but then, and it was another fellow. We took uh-huh. the job together because sometimes they needed a driver who would stay on land,
mm-hmm.
but we went back and forth, and we transported his car from the ship to the shore,
mm-hmm.
a lot of cases, but we were stationed out of Taiwan. That was our main port
mm-hmm.
on the Rochester or all the ships that it was on. And most of the time, this other fellow drove. He preferred to drive, and I liked doing the work on his boat. I was took care of the diesel engine on it and any of those other things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lights, there's all kinds of things. So, but I did drive occasionally, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed that too. I remember driving a big... The Navy had a big... they had quite a few buildings down on the dock at, mm-hmm. In Taiwan, mm-hmm. and they kept all kinds of equipment down there, and we would check... all we do is call and check out a truck if we wanted to take the Admiral and some men or something over up to Taipei or whatever, mm-hmm. and most of the time he just went up there for administrative work, mm-hmm. in a car.
Wow.
And so my buddy drove, but when we drove, we had a driver, we had a Marine guard, we sat in the front seat, mm-hmm. and the Admiral sat in the back, and usually he had his chief of staff or somebody, mm-hmm. with him. And one of the things that was most interesting with that job was, well, first of all, it wasn't... Some people would say it's you got a gravy job. Well, sometimes we were gone overnight. Mm-hmm. We put in lots of hours. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting because, mm-hmm. of the people that traveled with him. There were senators that came over. Mm-hmm. An officer of that rank usually has quite a following.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I stayed over there, and eventually we had our 6 months, and I transferred to the USS St. Paul. Mm-hmm. Which is another one just like that. I've got pictures in here. And then eventually Admiral Pride left. He, mm-hmm. was done with his command, and I probably screwed up. Everybody talks about, you know, when you look back in your life. Mm-hmm. He was transferred to Washington, D.C., and he asked me if I would like to go with and, mm-hmm. be his driver, mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And I said, no. He said, I'll see to it that you get enrolled into OCS, Officers Training School. Mm. I didn't. By that time, I just didn't have a lot of interest. The military, I even had a little bit of discomfort before I went in because I had two brothers that had been in, mm-hmm. and pretty rough stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet, to this day, our military is way out of whack. Mm-hmm. In this country, it's just, to me, what they spend and how much power they have. You remember, mm-hmm. what Eisenhower said? Beware the boy. Beware Eisenhower, who was our big leader in Europe, who was president, mm-hmm. said, watch out for the military. Mm-hmm. They will take over the country, and I think we've reached that point.
Mm-hmm. So you turned him down then?
Well, I didn't want to stay in any armed, yeah. forces. Mm-hmm. I was going to be a dentist.
Oh.
Go to Marquette in Milwaukee. I grew, mm-hmm. up near Racine County, mm-hmm. the farm kid. But that didn't work either. I changed my mind and went into Whitewater and got a teaching degree. And so back to this command, Admiral Pride. So I didn't go with him, and we got a new admiral. And this fellow here, Admiral Pride, was, he said to us when he'd get in the car, now, boys, he said, now, when we're in a car, it's first names. Huh. He said, just skip the admiral, sir, and all of this,
wow.
stuff. Yeah, he enjoyed, mm-hmm. a little separation of that. Mm-hmm. But he said, you got to understand, when you're outside of the car, mm-hmm. oh, of course, mm-hmm. you salute, it's mm-hmm. Admiral Pride, But then the next commander was...
Well, what did you think of him? Did you like him?
Oh, yeah. He was just quite a fella. Mm-hmm. He had been... His history in the Second World War was just tremendous. Mm-hmm. So he was... what do I want to say? He was... I'm losing track of my words. But he always thought of the troops under him as, you know, do whatever you can to make life easy, mm-hmm. for them. And yet... you know, run a tight ship. Mm-hmm. And so he'd say, well, we can laugh and joke in here. We can dispense with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You got an hour drive or whatever. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So he was just great. And I say that because when he left, we got this new admiral. His name right here, I've got Ingersoll, who was a very fine man too, but you didn't even talk to him. Mm-hmm. Just a
right.
completely different world.
Right.
Wow. And then, yeah. of course, I thought, so he was still... So I went aboard the St. Paul and then aboard the Helena. Uh-huh. That was the third cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So like I say, most of those Navy kids would go over across for 6 months and then they'd go back to San Diego or somewhere like that, see, mm-hmm. and maybe get a two-week leave to go home. Mm-hmm. But I never did that because of the situation.
Because you were volunteered for the draft.
I think so, because yeah. the officer said, "Yeah, you're going to get straight sea duty, buddy," because I wouldn't sign that paper. And I never forgot that. It didn't matter.
Huh.
But, you know, that ship, all of those ships that I was on, served during the Korean War. Uh-huh. And we saw a lot of film mm-hmm. of what, and I was glad I didn't have to see that. Mm-hmm. It was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
So, though a heavy cruiser is a monster, it's mm-hmm. pretty ugly.
What'd you do? So you were a driver on the entire time you were in there?
Mostly I was, I took care of his ship to shore boat.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that I stayed with the ship more than the driver did. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the driver would go and we wouldn't see him for 2 weeks. He might stay up in Taipei because the admiral flew out of there and went to Japan or whatever, and this guy mm-hmm. just stayed up there because he had to pick him up when he came back.
So were you guys, like, were you on patrol?
Yes.
On these
ships? So if you read this,
mm-hmm.
this was this Time magazine. Let's see, has they got a date on here?
I was looking for it. I didn't see it. Maybe at the top there.
Yeah. I think that was the issue.
Oh, 1955, February 7th, 1955.
But notice what the banner says here. Defense of Formosa, U.S.
Strategy.
And that's what we were doing there. We mm-hmm. patrol the waters between Taiwan and China, because China and Korea, that ended.
Mm-hmm.
China was, of course, involved in that heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like the fact that, and I can't tell you right now, the political. When we came to Taiwan, Chiang Kai-shek was in command, and it's everybody should read a book about him. It was quite a deal mm-hmm. in how he took over. Taiwan was kind of an independent state at that point, and of course it still is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's American because we were there. Let's see, in Hong Kong we had leased Hong Kong. I think we gave that up during the Carter administration. We didn't give it up. The lease ran out. It was the United States and Britain that had that, but I think China has that now, and China's still trying to get Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so basically that was my time spent overseas, and when I came back home, I had about a month left in the service.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Great Lakes because I was, I lived near there,
mm-hmm.
up in Racine County,
mm-hmm.
and then I was discharged a little early, but I was in basically active duty for 2 years.
Hmm.
So fortunately, I had a young, older brother who served while I was in boot camp. They came, an orderly came to me and said, "You have a slip here to go see your brother." I said, "You must have the wrong guy, because my brother's in Korea."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "No, your brother's across the street in the Navy hospital." So I did go over to see him. I was still in boot camp, so I was just new in the service. And I walked in, and they had a desk there where the nurse would be, but she was down the line
mm-hmm.
taking care of somebody or whatever. So I thought, well, that's not a problem. I'll know it. I'll walk down through and look at these guys. I couldn't find my brother. He was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't been wounded, but he got hepatitis.
Hmm.
You know what that is? Hepatitis?
I think so.
Yeah, it's a... Usually you get it from eating pork and it gets into your liver.
Mm-hmm.
He's 80 years old now and he's still struggling with it.
Wow.
You get hepatitis, you can get it. I had a fellow teacher here that got it. But now they have better treatment for it. You get over it pretty well.
Uh-huh. So did you find him?
I had to ask the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
because she came walking. She was up there. Oh, she said, yeah, not. He was on death's bed when I saw him. Hmm. Pretty bad.
Did he recognize you?
Yeah, after we talked for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't stay too long, so. But he got discharged then, and he had been over there for quite some time. But And then the older brother, who's 85 now, he's, World War II was over, but he got, so he was one of the first groups of Army personnel that were sent into Japan. Mm-hmm. Now you can imagine what we did to Japan. Mm-hmm. And so they were there, and all, I really don't know what he did, but it was, I do remember him saying this, that we never venture too far from our camp. Mm-hmm. Because it was pretty hostile in Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, even when we went ashore in Japan, we were told to travel at least in twos, but maybe threes or fours. Mm-hmm. So that's what I always did, because you never know. There's still some people that were, their parents were killed, mm-hmm. you know, their brothers, whatever. So. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate. I never saw, I think I had a pretty mellow tour of duty. I could talk about the beautiful storms we had in the South Pacific. Down there, they call them hurricanes, typhoons. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, pretty bad. And if you have, when you're aboard a big man-of-war ship like that, mm-hmm. you are helpless if you're in port. So we'd always go out to sea and ride out the storm, and that's the only way. There's a lot of power there, and you can mm-hmm. put your nose into it and just keep cruising, and mm-hmm. it works pretty good.
Did you ever get sick?
Oh, yeah. Mm. I found out I wasn't. Oh, not. I got over it, but most everyone did. But then sometimes you'd get it back. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to sea, you don't eat much. Mm-hmm. That's always the story, and some people wouldn't listen to that, but they would cook a light meal if you're going to go to sea.
If you got sick, did they let you just have time off, or did you have to do your work anyway?
Well, fortunately, when I went to sea, I didn't have any work to do.
That seems odd. It seems like usually you're assigned something before you
I volunteered a lot, and mm-hmm. it was recommended. Mm-hmm. So I really got to do some pretty interesting things. Mm-hmm. But we had work to do. We had the admiral's barge, we had the captain's gig, and we had the officer's boat. Those three boats belonged to the unit, the command unit that mm-hmm. I was with. And we plucked those out of the water with a big crane, and they went aboard the ship. Mm-hmm. We'd put them on a cradle, mm-hmm. four-wheeled, just like a trailer that you trailer a boat in, only mm-hmm. that was heavy duty, and then we'd lash them down to the deck with big cables so they couldn't go overboard. Mm-hmm. And we could always do work on them, mm-hmm. cleaning them up and fixing little things, and mm-hmm. kept them in good shape. And if there was anything major, they'd go to the shipyard.
Yeah. So. Well, let me look at my questions here and see if there's anything. When you went through boot camp, was there any interesting things that happened to you there, funny stories?
Oh, sure. I can give you one. Well, I got into boot camp. It was like...
And where did you go for
boot Great Lakes. Camp? And I lived in Racine at the time.
Right. Okay.
I lived in Sturdivant, which is just west of Racine, uh-huh. country, little country town. But you get to Great Lakes, and they send you to this barracks, and you just hang around there until 60 men show up. And they're coming in from all over the country all the time. When you get 60 men, that's a unit. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get an officer that comes with them, and then you start your process. Mm-hmm. These guys, this was cold. It was November, and mm-hmm. they come out of Georgia.
Oh, poor guys.
Yeah. And, you know, this was quite a few years ago. This was 1955, 54. Uh-huh. And, teeth missing, bad hygiene, terrible. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of an awakening for me. I had lived in white, rural Wisconsin. Uh-huh. We had quite a few blacks. Mm-hmm. And before boot camp was out, we had lost probably half of those. They were all, they shouldn't have been in the service. They were, they weed people out pretty fast.
How do they weed them out?
They just send them home. They aren't even really in yet until they get through boot camp.
Uh-huh. So they just get discharged?
Yeah.
Is it dishonorable?
No, not really at that point, no. Mm-hmm. And not at that point. Mm-hmm. So, but it wasn't just them. We had, maybe somebody would call it poor white trash, you know, and they could be from anywhere. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But also we had a lot of Southerners, and I'd say, would you speak English? We used to kid them. Good guys, bunch of good guys. So that was, I guess, being a little country boy, I had to catch up with all of that in a hurry. And there were some pretty savory characters, big men, you know, mm-hmm. that were from big cities. And because I was a small person, you had to... Now, once I got aboard ship, you realize that... And there, too, they would weed some out every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't stand being out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one kid breaking down, and he said, I want my mother, and he was crying. And I thought, how can you, you're 18, 19 years old, crying for your mother? I mean, I would never think of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my mother.
Right.
But yeah, we heard him, and I thought, whoa, you better get him out of here, and they did.
Do they reclassify him or just send him home, do you think?
No, he went back to stateside
uh-huh.
if he was aboard ship and really had a problem.
Uh-huh.
That would be their first step, try to find a place for them there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them just couldn't take. There's 1,200 men aboard that ship. You're packed in like sardines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and after a while, good things wear off.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, it'd be a pretty nasty fight. Usually there were enough people around to stop it. So somebody, if they were really out of line, started it, they'd go disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
They'd ship them out as fast as they could so mm-hmm. that you could. In the Navy, the armed forces generally, they do that
mm-hmm.
no matter what you're in if you don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
I think more so it, you know, and it's tougher yet in the submarines now where they go below water and stay there for months.
Oh, yeah, boy. That'd be hard.
Yeah, so they have, the qualifications are just tighter. But that's part of what boot camp is for, to mm-hmm. find out if you're able to even go to sea, because they don't send everybody to sea.
Mm-hmm.
They'll keep troublemakers. Maybe they fit in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And or they get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are young guys.
So you made it through boot camp without any issue?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have...
And you didn't get into any fights on the ships or anything?
No.
No,
I wasn't a scrapper. I generally walk away from that. And
stay out of trouble.
Aboard ship. Well, what happened to me when I woke up one day, I was a seaman recruit, and the next day I was driving for this 3-star admiral.
Uh-huh.
Whoa!
Uh-huh.
I had to get up to speed in a hurry.
Yeah.
With a lot of things.
Yeah. Probably stressful.
I think it helped me a lot because my first teaching job was assistant principal here.
Mm-hmm.
And within 1 year, I was high school principal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was because I learned you had to do quick
mm-hmm.
what somebody told you. And these were so...
Mm-hmm.
That... I think that position trained me for a lot of things that were to come.
So did you have any close friends or guys that like kind of stayed with you through most of the tour, or because you were at sea for 2 years, did you find that you didn't?
Oh, no, I have some friends that I still contact.
Do you?
But that's pretty much gone. It just happens.
Uh-huh.
You know, you get busy with your own life. There's a fellow down in Chicago that was not in boot camp with me, and I met him aboard ship, my first ship. Although when I moved to the second ship, he was gone. But I looked him up here all, like, 15 years ago mm-hmm. on the computer or whatever, mm-hmm. and my daughter had moved to Chicago. So then we went down there. I thought, oh, I'll look up this George guy,
mm-hmm.
and found him.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a nice reunion, but mm-hmm. that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I did contact there were three of us, remember, that moved around trying to find our ship.
Right.
And I did find one of those fellows. He was from Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And because we went to the same ship to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Both of those other two fellows got, I don't know, they got transferred out of the 7th Fleet Command.
Mm-hmm.
The 7th Fleet Command just assigned them to one of the ships, which they really wanted to do, and there was a job there for them, mm-hmm. so they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they wound up being what we call ship's company.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're a member of that ship. I was not a member of that ship. I was a member of the 7th Fleet Command, which okay. moved mm-hmm. all the time.
So you found him. Was he surprised to see you?
I didn't see him. I just made a contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. So otherwise, I haven't seen anyone. I don't particularly. I guess I came home and started college, and was pretty busy ever since.
I was going to ask a little bit more about that. So when you got out, you knew that you wanted to go to college, so you just started college right away. And
no,
did you get the GI Bill?
Yes,
after that?
I did.
Okay, for all that, okay. That's good.
It was amazing, so we got $110 a month.
Uh-huh.
And I went to school, tuition was $78 a semester.
Hmm. What did you end up going to?
Whitewater. That's
Whitewater?
College, yeah.
And you went for teaching?
I started at the University of Wisconsin because my parents lived in Sturtevant, which is right near Racine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a two-year college there.
Mm-hmm.
It was UW. Now it's UW Parkside. Mm-hmm. They closed that little unit they had in Racine, and they built that Parkside over
okay.
in Kenosha. I don't know if you know where that is.
I prefer that.
You've been here then, yeah. That's part of the UW system.
Mm-hmm.
And I went 2 years in Racine and then transferred to Whitewater.
What subject did you teach?
Well, I was going to get an accounting degree is what it really turned out. And when I went to Whitewater, I got into business ed because I would get, as a teacher, teach business in a high school. You have to teach all the subjects in a lot of small schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, well, I met a couple fellas in Racine when we were going to school there, and then we all transferred to Whitewater because those guys started out in Whitewater right after high school,
mm-hmm.
and then they went into service because they flunked out.
Oh.
So now they're going back because they liked Whitewater, and they convinced me because I was their friend.
Uh-huh.
There were three of us that hung around together in Racine when we went to college. Well, they had been in the service as well,
uh-huh.
and they changed quite a bit. That will do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all graduated, and the other two didn't go teaching. I was the only teacher. I went teaching. But see, in business ed, business education, gonna be a teacher, you could go, there were two tracks. Most of the girls went to secretarial mode.
Mm-hmm.
You still had to teach accounting and so forth, but you took more emphasis in classes and secretarial skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I took accounting.
Mm-hmm.
That was my major. So I could, when I graduated, I could have become an accountant, mm-hmm. taken a job or teach. So, and I used to kid people. I took teaching because I liked June, July, and August.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think a lot of people do.
You don't make a lot of money, but it was a pretty nice life. My wife and I both taught. I met her in college. And
uh-huh.
so, we both taught in the same system.
Uh-huh.
And our kids went, we had time off when our kids had time off, and it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
But even when I was in Taipei one time, there were three of us went up there on, we had taken 3 days off, we had 3 days off, and we could go up there, so we had to sign to do that, because that's not normally where, if you leave the ship, you went to Keelong, that's where the ship was docked. You couldn't go any further than that. We had to get special permission to go to the capital city, and that was the only place that would let us go, which made sense. The naval attache was up there, so we went up there on leave, so to speak, and I heard about this place that was a private school in an old castle downtown Taipei. I said, we gotta go see that. So we went there and visited that school. Not too much of many of them spoke English. And we were going to stay for an hour or two. Well, we were there most of the day. We just had a ball. And they were interested in us because no other sailors had ever visited there. And to make a long story short, some years later when I became principal here and I hired a math teacher, a Chinese woman whose mother owned and operated that school.
Wow. Small world.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah, her mom was there.
Her mother. Okay. It wasn't long after that. See, they had come from China. That's what happened. They were Chinese when the communists took over in China. They ousted all the big, the communists, you take a look at that. Before that, China was run by imperialists. And this family, this lady that owned that school in Taipei, was part of the proletariat, the very rich in China. And they had to grab their bags and go out the back door quickly at night. And the new regime came in and they squelched all of that because, they were like the United States is becoming. We got the very rich and pretty soon we'll have the poor and nobody in between. And so it's really funny because when this Chinese girl that I hired as a math teacher was here working, she said, my mother's coming to visit. I said, why is she coming here? Well, she said she's coming to see me, but she has two of her teachers have retired, and she's giving them an around-the-world free trip. She's taking them. She had lots of money. This gal that was our teacher, she'd come to school, and she'd have a different big ring on every day, like a jade one day and a ruby, and just, worth lots of dollars. I told her, I said, I'm not sure you should be wearing those here. But the kids don't know the difference. But anyway, she could do what she wanted. I didn't care. So when she came, I said, now, your daughter told me a little bit about, and I told you about a time I visited a school. She says, yeah, I have a picture here. There we were.
Oh, my gosh.
She took a picture of, she was in the picture. That was kind of funny. Another one, small world, huh?
Did you get a copy of it?
I have a little, just didn't, I'm not a collector, really. A lot of things I look back on in my life, how come I don't have that? And I do have it somewhere, but if I don't know if I can put my finger on it. Yeah, her daughter now had, she left here, her husband was, got a degree in nuclear physics. And they're living in Philadelphia. So they moved there from here. In fact, it was not last summer, the summer before she came to visit.
So let's see here. Looking back, how do you feel about your military experience? What has it meant for your life?
Military is big time, You're a small-time farm kid, and all at once you're put into, this is a huge, world at that point. You're just a number in this mechanism, though, is, and then you go to, compared to being in Great Lakes, you know, you're in these buildings. When we were out in the fleet, I mean, that was so many things you had to learn. Mm-hmm. You were just a cog, and you know, if you didn't do your job, you know, that, and it scared me to think that I had a 3-star admiral sitting in the back seat.
That would make me nervous.
Yeah, you better do the right thing. Yeah. Yeah, so in spite of the fact that I grew to not think so much of our military, because our military, it's even gotten worse with me now. Not that I wouldn't support our military, but I think that, you know, we encroach, in my opinion, way too much in the world. I mean, the United States, I don't think we can operate without a war, because it's tied up our economy so much. I'm still convinced we have, our 9/11 was due to the fact that we have our fingers in too many places. They just, there's a few, you know, there was a small group. Look at how they took, how they pulled that off. There was no army involved. Mm-hmm. They used our planes. Mm-hmm. Pretty smart. Mm-hmm. And they hit us right in our heart and soul, right in the financial unit in those buildings. By the way, I had a son-in-law whose office was in the World Trade Center. When it went down, but he wasn't there. He was out on the road.
Thank God. Yeah.
Yeah, they lived in New York. We went out to visit there and had a dinner, a brunch at the top of one of the World Trade Centers. It's the top of the park, they kind of call it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact name of that, but you could feel the building swaying. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I like to sit by the window and watch it. You could pick out a landmark down below, and then you'd, the building would move past it. You wouldn't see it for a while, and then you go back.
Wow.
But they're made, designed to do that.
Yeah. Huh.
His office was on the 13th floor, and so when this thing happened, all of his people got out.
Good.
Because they were below. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the floor that hit was, mm-hmm. but no. I go back to your question on how the. I mean, I think I was just twice the student in college because of what I endured in the Navy, mm-hmm. especially when I hit that point where I was working with officials. Mm-hmm. I also found out the bad side of the officer's country. Those guys, you know, they have, a lot of them had their mistresses, mm-hmm. and those, you'd see that, you mm-hmm. know, you're just pretty disgusting, I mm-hmm. guess I would, I always viewed it that way. I wasn't brought up that way, so.
Yeah. Even the guy you liked?
No, he was, both of those fellas, there were two of them that worked under Ingersoll, and no, they were jewels. Uh-huh. They were, I think when you reach that point, there are some that do that, of course, in mm-hmm. any level. Mm-hmm. But the higher you get, the more prone you are to extreme criticism. It'd be like Clinton, what a dummy. How do you think you can get away with some of those things? That's what bothered me about him.
Yeah.
And I was a supporter of him, and I think you really ticked me off.
Yeah. Well, I think the media, I wonder if people did get away with it, but now with media everywhere, you just can't.
Pretty tough.
Yeah.
Well, and then, I have to add this.
Okay.
So, there was a unit that came aboard our ship every now and then, mm-hmm. because we were Big Iron, we called ourselves. Big. That's pretty big. I mean, That cruiser's 700 feet long. It's just wow. Huge. 110 guns. It's ugly. Uh-huh. But we'd get the frogmen. That unit would come aboard every now and then. That's just awesome, the training those fellows go through.
Mm-hmm. What's frogmen?
Oh, they're special forces, mm-hmm. just like the Berets, the okay. Green Berets. Mm-hmm. But the frogmen are the Navy men that...
Okay.
that swim underwater and blow up ships. And oh, they do. They're just, first of all, just look at them. You don't want to even think.
You don't want to mess with them.
But they're very harmless. They've been taught that way. You don't touch anyone else. You just, right. Because actually you could be charged with a weapon, use of a weapon, because of the skills they've developed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a boxer. Now, boxing has kind of gone out, but when I was a young kid growing up, we had boxing every Friday night. We listened to the radio, and if a boxer goes out and he gets to fight with somebody and he kills them with his fist, that's the same as, they're charged with the same thing as if they shot them.
Mm-hmm.
So once you reach the point of golden glove status,
mm-hmm.
These kids that I hired a counselor at the high school, he taught manual arts and he was also a halftime counselor.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Big Ten champion, and I said, you understand. Oh, he said, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't touch anybody. So mm-hmm. I said, you better leave. And he had a big mitt on him, and I, you know, big hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I won't have any trouble with that. I'm pretty cool. So mm-hmm. yeah, those fellas were just, they were amazing to watch the discipline.
Mm-hmm. What'd they do on your ship?
Oh, they would practice
mm-hmm.
putting on their gear and mm-hmm. diving overboard and come up on the other side of the ship, even when it was moving.
Wow.
They'd go forward and they'd dive off this side, and then we'd run back and they'd come up on the other side near the back, the aft of the ship, and uh-huh. then climb aboard again. There's a lot of current under there.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go through that. Mm-hmm. I mean, with 100 pounds of stuff on their back,
yeah.
besides. But that probably helped them buoyant. You know, they had the air tanks and
yeah.
things.
Huh.
When we were in port, then they'd go ashore. You'd watch them go in there, and they'd sneak. They had their black lifeboat types of things, mm-hmm. and that was all part of their practice. And then they'd go do calisthenics up
on the
mountains.
Did you get any pictures of that kind of stuff?
No, I don't. I had a lot of pictures, which I had stolen from me early on, so I didn't take so many after that.
Uh-huh.
Just aboard ship, I had a... You have a foot locker. It's about this wide, that high, everything in there. And I come in there one night, and I see the whole back of it was cut open.
Oh.
It was aluminum.
Uh-huh.
Whoever went in there, and I had just bought a new camera, an Argus C4, and it was really a good camera at that time. It's nothing, of course, now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had shown that off a little bit, so that was a mistake. And then somebody took a big knife and pushed it through there, ripped it up, and went in and took the camera, and a whole box of... At that time, you took slides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I still have a bunch of those in there. They preserve very well.
I'd like to see those.
Those are pretty nice. And I lost a lot of those. I gotta...
Well, let's... maybe we could wrap it up for today, and then if there's other stories that you think of, we can do another one, because we're coming up on an hour here.
Yeah.
Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I thought about this, and I thought, well, if I just tell the story, it'll probably be just fine.
Yeah.